So there are federal laws that apply anytime there's a federal candidate on the ballot, which is what we have coming up in November, that say you can't pay anyone to register to vote or to vote. And so what essentially he's doing is he's setting up a lottery, and the only people who can participate are people who are registered to vote. So it's actually either creating an incentive for people to register to vote or a reward for them having already registered to vote. And it's clear that this violates the statute. And the Department of Justice has an election crimes manual specifically mentions lotteries as an impermissible basis on which to get people to register or to vote.
So, Rick, a former chair of the Federal Election Commission told the Times that because Musk isn't directly paying people to register, but instead paying them to sign a petition, even if it's only open to registered voters, he, quote, comes out okay here. I mean, you even heard Musk telling the crowd in Pennsylvania there that they don't even have to vote. He says, in fact, that twice. So I just wonder what you think the case might be. Is it strong enough that somebody might bring it?
Well, first of all, if you want to sign the petition, you go to sign the petition, you look at what the eligibility is. And also, this is the eligibility to get those $100 payments from Musk. It says you must be a registered voter in a swing state. So imagine we have a contest. We say anyone can win $1 million if they wear a pair of glasses, but they also have to be a registered voter. Well, the glasses is just kind of a make weight. You're really saying we're going to give you a chance to win if you register to vote. This is a federal law. It would be enforced by the United States Department of Justice. I don't expect we'd see anything before the election. DOJ moves very slowly on their criminal prosecutions, but nothing would stop DOJ from putting out a notice saying that this kind of contest is illegal, just like DOJ recently put out a notice saying that states can't have wholesale purges of voters in the 90 days before the election because that violates federal law.
So, of course, rich people giving money to campaigns in one way or another is nothing new, right? But I wonder if you look at it big picture, if there are laws that need to be considered here. We're in a place we've never seen before. First of all, a lot more billionaires than they have ever been. Very publicly influential. Musk, for example, not only has money to burn, but he has X, formerly Twitter. Trump has said he'd make a new cabinet position for Musk if he's elected. So I wonder, are there laws out there? Do laws need to change because of the kind of changing influence we're seeing from people with deep pockets?
So to be clear, under current law, it's unconstitutional, thanks to the Supreme Court, to limit spending in elections. The Supreme Court decided that in 1976. They reaffirmed that in the Citizens United case in 2010. Congress tried to pass laws limiting spending by the ultra-rich in elections, and the Supreme Court said that that's a violation of the First Amendment. So all the other things that Musk is doing, his work with X, his giving the money to the super PAC, those are all considered legal under current system. And then the question is, do we want to think about amending the Constitution to change the role of the ultra wealthy? But that's really very different than what Musk is doing with this lottery, which seems to be a clear violation of federal law.
Rick Hassan, thank you so much.
It's great to catch up, Jamie. How's business?
Good. Are you up to speed with the new beneficial ownership reporting requirements?
Sort of. What's it about?
It's a new initiative to help fight crimes like money laundering, fraud, and drug trafficking. A lot of small businesses like ours just have to report some basic info to the federal government about the real people behind them.
Does that include my cafe?
There are some exemptions for certain companies, but don't worry. There's lots of guidance on the government's website about who needs to file. Check out fincen.gov/BOI. Filing is easy and free. It took me less than 20 minutes.
Looks like I do have to file. Thanks, Jamie. It's great having a supportive business community.
Reporting beneficial ownership information helps protect U.S. national security. Filing is quick, secure, and free. And it's the law. Learn more at fincen.gov/BOI.
I always had to be so good, no one could ignore me. Carve my path with data and drive. But some people only see who I am on paper. The paper ceiling, the limitations from degree screens to stereotypes that are holding back over 70 million stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time for skills to speak for themselves. Find resources for breaking through barriers at tearthepaperceiling.org. brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh, and you're listening to Ebony Spectrum and In Black America. Several sections for you today. Well, actually, several segments for you today. So we'll take a look at what folks have to offer from around the country and around the world. Thanks for listening.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reasoned Choice Media.
Welcome, 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 welcome,
welcome. Welcome home, you guys. It's a really busy political season. So you guys heard on the main episode we talked about, is the Democratic Party's tent too big? And so we thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about what is it that we want from our political institutions, and specifically the Democratic Party, but maybe that and beyond. So we wanted to have...
You've tuned in to Pandemonium, a public affairs anthology from WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. And now, Pandemonium.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. It's time for another edition of Pandemonium here. It's been a pretty new show. It's going for a few weeks now. Basically, DJs just do whatever they want to do. My name's Bill. I normally do a heavy metal show on Sunday nights called To Evil to Have a Human Name. But I'm also very interested in bagpiping. I've been playing myself for a few years. And CMU obviously has a big history of piping. And today on our episode, I have Andrew Carlisle, who's the director of piping here. He's going to talk a little bit about himself and his position and CMU and play a few tunes for us. Welcome to the show, Andy. How long have you been here at CMU for?
Oh, hello, Bill. Yeah, I've been in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon now for almost 12 years, just coming up to the end of the 12th year yet.
Yeah, and how did that all happen? Where did you start out and how did you end up here?
Oh, I'm originally from a small village in Northern Ireland called Ballygowan. And when I was 7 years old, I took up the instrument, the bagpipe. And yeah, just kind of took it from there. Ended up, you know, studying with some of the great players in both Ireland and Scotland. And then played with some various bands across the water. And then I was kind of finishing up grad school, and the job at Carnegie Mellon was posted, so I just applied for it, and here I am, I guess, 12 years later, yeah. So 2010 is when I started.
All right, and it's now 2022. You've been obviously enjoying your time here. You really enjoy the piping program here at CMU. You think it's up there with other places in the world?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was actually the first in the world to offer a degree in piping and also the first to offer a master's. And yeah, it's a terrific institution here. We've got a really good program and a really good student body. The degree program is actually quite small, being that you have to be a very high standard to be admitted to it. But we also have a lot of non-music majors that play the pipes, that come for lessons and play in the band. And we also have the opportunity for first year students to, you know, just learn the instrument from scratch. You know, so I do a lot of teaching beginners as well here.
And do you get a lot of those kind of students that seem to really, you know, stick with it? Or do you get a lot of people that just come in and the oddity of it maybe, since you don't have as much piping as back home?
I mean, usually, with any musical instrument, there's quite a big commitment as to like learning it and, you know, sticking with it and practicing. And sometimes you do get some people that get excited by it, but you know, when they start their academic studies in computer science or biology or whatever it may be, it gets a bit too much and they give it up. But the vast majority do stick with it. I would say there's at least maybe an 80% retention rate from people who start out to versus people that, you know, don't stick with it, kind of thing, on the beginner front. Yeah. And I get students from all over the world. You know, I've had them from pretty much every continent, aside from Antarctica, I guess, yeah.
Maybe someday. And obviously there's the CMU band. which is pretty active. Doing a lot of different events. You'll be doing the graduation ceremony soon.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a pretty good pipe band here. The last time the American Pipe Band Championships were held in 2019, pre-pandemic, Carnegie Mellon won. So a pretty high standard of pipe band. It's very active in the greater Pittsburgh community. We just finished up a series of five concerts with River City Brass Band. A series called Celtic Connections. We'll be playing at Commencement. We just played a couple of weeks ago at CMU's Spring Carnival. We're at the St. Patrick's Day Parade downtown in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, we're pretty active in the community as well.
And then you're also involved with the Pittsburgh Piping Society here, which is something that you and a few other pipers started a few years ago. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's probably about 7 or 8 years ago now that we started it. So, basically, there were a lot of bagpipers in Pittsburgh, and a lot of them seemed to live in apartments or condos and things like that that they couldn't practice, or they didn't have very many opportunities that they could go and either play with other pipers or play in front of other pipers. So we kind of just formed this as a kind of social club, and basically the format is it's kind of like an open mic night for bagpipers. So if you want to come and have a tune in front of a supportive, friendly environment, it's a perfect place for people to come along. And we've had it in various different venues throughout the city over the years. But with the average kind of crowd we usually get is about 60 people, I think.
And it's based on some earlier piping societies, correct? Including one here in the Pittsburgh area?
That's right, yeah. Unknown to me, there was a Pittsburgh Bagpipe Society, PBS. I'm not sure if they copyrighted the initials or not back then, but yeah, in the late 1800s, there was a Pittsburgh Bagpiping Society. I don't know too much about it, but I've seen records that it definitely existed. It must have kind of, stopped existing at some point in the early 1900s. But yeah, thankfully in the kind of 2000s, I guess, we resurrected it, yeah. And, it's pretty thriving. We just had an evening there last Friday evening in Squirrel Hill, and with a very good turnout, and with at least maybe a dozen pipers that played in that evening, yeah.
If there's anyone listening right now that's not really knowledgeable at bagpiping or anything like that, where should they check? Just check the website for that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Pittsburgh Piping Society will have a Facebook page, and I believe the website's currently under construction, but yeah, we do have a website. But yeah, the Facebook page is pretty active as to like when the next gathering or meeting or performance is going to be.
All right, great. Well, let's get into some music. You mind playing a few tunes for us?
Yeah, sure.
Up first, you're going to play Marsh Strathspey and Reel. You want to tell us a little bit about those tunes real quick before
sure.
you go?
Sure, well, a march just being real. So first of all, it's a march, so quite from the Scottish military tradition. And the march I'm going to play is The Braes of Castle Grant. The first two parts of it are traditional, and the third and fourth parts were added by a great piper called George Stuart McLennan. A strathspey is a type of Highland dance. The Highland Fling is the dance that goes to the strathspey. And the strathspey I'm going to play is called Inverary Castle. And the reel is a traditional reel, just a different type of Scottish dance, a Scottish reel. Mm-hmm. And the reel is entitled The Rejected Suitor.
All right, great. Well, let's get right into it.
Thank you.
All right, Andy, that was great. What do you got next? Hopefully it's something maybe, you know, a little faster, a little more party atmosphere.
Sure. Well, how about a hornpipe and jig?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, so I'll try a hornpipe and jig, which is, two of the more lively dances in the Scottish repertoire. The hornpipe's called Jim Tweedy Sea Legs, and it was composed by a New Zealander called John Alan McGee.
That sounds like a very New Zealand type name.
I guess. Well, it's got five parts in it, and apparently it's each of the parts are to represent one of the seas that he had to cross to get to Scotland. And then the jig is a composition by pipe major Donald MacLeod, and it's called Donald Cameron's Powder Horn.
All right, perfect. You've been listening to WRCT. We're coming to the end of this episode of Pandemonium. I've been here speaking and listening to Andrew Carlisle, director of piping here at CMU, and he's got one more piece of music to play, a pibroch, some classical bagpipe music. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this final piece you're going to be doing?
Sure. Well, a pibroch is kind of the classical music for the Great Highland Bagpipe, and it was composed in the Highlands and Islands of Scotland. It can be traced back to the 1500s, and it kind of originated on the west coast of the Isle of Skye in a place called Borag by the McCrimmon family. And so these are very old pieces of music, and it basically consists of a theme, like a melody, and then there's subsequent variations on that melody as you go through the piece. And as you go through the piece, the variations get more technically complex. but they're all based off the original theme. And the piece that I'm going to play is quite a rhythmic piece. It's called The Red Speckled Bull. Now, there's a couple of different stories behind the name. The first is, it's thought to have perhaps been a mistranslation in the Scottish Gaelic, and it was actually supposed to be the Red Speckled Army. So basically the English Redcoats, you know, that they're the Scottish clansmen were witnessing at the time. And the other story about the tune is that, well, bagpipe bags are made of leather, and apparently one of the McCrimmons wrestled a bull and killed the bull and skinned the bull and made his pipe bag out of the skin.
Not sure which story is more brutal.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, this is a long piece, so sit back and relax. You've been listening to show Pandemonium. This tune's going to finish off the set, so enjoy and have a good rest of the evening. Thank you, Andy.
You've been listening to Pandemonium. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT or Carnegie Mellon University. Email comments or questions to WRCT Public Affairs, pa@wrct.org. Thanks for listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you the best music.
another banger. Dog on my phone if it's not by the money, oh, the money. At the party, if I drop it back to the bed, do him or center. South African body, stuck in my bed, take out on my phone later. And if you owe me money, pay me, I know if you forget my rubber. California, but could make me so, 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 so. She been a high dancing, money cover my face, eh, goon, goon, eh, goon, goon. Look at you, can't catch me sleeping, eh, goo-goo. But if I can go California, but could make me zoo-zoo-zoo-zoo. She been a high dancing, money cover my face, eh, goo-goo, eh, goo-goo. Hey, hey, baby, 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 hey, baby, baby. Ha, who be that girl with the shaky, baby? Call a me good body, call a me good body. Bing, yeah, she can't get kick. Hey, well, it get $50,000, use and spend, no, lily. Dog on my phone if it's not by the money, oh, the money. To the bed, to the more center, oh. South African body stuck in my bed, take out on my wallet.
misuse prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community, at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
WRCT 88.3 FM. My name's DJ Tony Tunes, and you're listening to From Here to Eternity, that show where we take a trip back to the 80s you never knew. Well, fun fact, I'm not actually in the studio right now, nor will I be for quite some time, taking a little bit of a, we'll call it a sabbatical. Not really a sabbatical, I'm in DC. But doesn't mean that I can't keep on bringing some music to you. Because at the end of the day, you know, there are people that do tune in and don't want to leave you hanging. So we're still going, albeit remotely. So I'm pre-recording this. Unfortunately, no more live studio for a little bit. But we'll still be bringing you some synth-drenched sounds. They'll be coming to you still. And we'll start off today, you know, just kind of recognizing that that's what it is. C'est la vie. Which is also the name of a song that many of you may know by Robbie Neville. But although it was written by him, it wasn't initially performed by him. It was actually originally performed by another gentleman, still written by Robbie Neville, but it was performed originally by, if I have it over here, a gentleman by the name of, lost it here, Bew Williams, and he's going to be bringing that to us right now. So enjoy and stay tuned.